Paul, having originally done the work over at the Island Casino Resort and that golf course now about 8-9 years ago or so, how nice was it to get a call from them to come back and create a second golf course?
Well, the biggest compliment that I think an architect can get in his career is to be asked by your client to do a second golf course. And so I was honored and flattered to be asked again, which I believe it's a sign that these guys liked me as an architect, liked what we did, and liked our design philosophy and how we performed. So, yeah, I was thrilled to get asked again.
From talking with you, we understand that you got to kind of go on a little property search, that the owners of the resort had a lot of acreage and a couple different places to check out. Take us through that search and how you arrived at the land here at Sage Run.
Yeah, the tribe has quite a bit of property around the region, and when Scott and Tony were first considering doing a second golf course, they had to figure out where they wanted to put it. So they recruited me to help them figure out the best parcel on where to put the golf course, and we narrowed it down to less than 1,000 acres over in this region, and then from that 1,000 acres, we narrowed it down to the best 200 to 300 acres, which we figured would be with this drumlin where the current site is.
And having that drumlin, you have the opportunity there. And I know a lot of architects, they look for a little elevation change, but you got more than a little elevation change there, didn't you?
Well, yeah, that's why we chose this piece of the property. As I showed the guys in my group today, the other acres that we had to look at, and there's quite a few good golf holes on the other acres that we had been designing earlier in the process. But we did finally settle on these acres because of the drumlin, which did, at the end of the day, give us the most elevation change. And elevation change really is a key ingredient in many cases to building a great golf course. If you have elevation change, it gives you a step up and a leg up on making a great course.
And for the person that maybe has played Sweetgrass at some point, they may ask, am I going to come out there and say, yeah, this kind of hole feels like it's this hole over at Sweetgrass. Is there going to be, am I going to be able to recognize the style and say, hey, I can tell Paul Albanese did this golf course?
I highly doubt it, actually. I don't think there'll be anybody that could put together the design flavor style from Sweetgrass and make a comparison over here to Sage Run. They're completely different starting points or ingredients, you would say. It would be like someone trying to say, would they be able to recognize a hamburger from a salad? They're pretty different. I use the analogy of red wine and white wine. So they're completely different flavors. And if you can't tell the difference between red wine and white wine, your palate's pretty bad. And I think you'd have a hard time making comparison here because they're very different flavors.
Well, take us through when you started construction. I know the golf course was able to start opening for limited play this June. Any major issues come up through the construction time that you unfortunately might have run into?
Construction went pretty smooth. We started probably the least smooth part would have been the early part of the construction with the clearing. But once we got through the clearing issues and getting the trees down that we needed down, everything else flowed pretty smoothly. We had a few weeks of weather at some point in the process that slowed us down for a couple weeks, but it was nothing inordinate and it didn't do major damage. I've been on a lot worse projects due to weather and construction issues. So for the most part, this came about pretty smoothly and we're happy with the results.
It always seems like there's one hole maybe that turned out better than you hoped when you first drew it up, and when you got out there and you started working on it and you started shaping it and doing those things, all of a sudden it really came together and you said, geez, this is even better than I hoped it would be. Is there one hole or so that that does that for you out there?
Yeah, hole six, I think, came out better than we expected. We saw it on the topo maps, so we knew it was a pretty good hole, and when we staked it out for the trees, I remember walking up and down the terrain thinking, I think this might be a pretty good golf hole someday. And we got it cleared and we got it shaped. And then after we shaped up the bunkers, everyone pretty much stands on the tee and goes, wow, this was way better than we expected on this golf hole.
You get out there and, of course, there's number six. But that's not the only hole that has some real serious elevation change, whether it's going up the hill or coming down the hill from the tee box. Tell us about some of those holes that really have some severe rises or drops.
There's quite a few places where we went up and down the drumlin, and that was intentional, was to find different parts of the routing plan that would go up and down and over the drumlin and through it. And, you know, forgive me if I forget some of the whole numbers, because we did flip the nines toward the end of construction, so I'm more used to the old hole numbers than the new ones. But number 15, I believe, 15 is downhill, over a tremendous view to the west, where you're going to get in the fall some just exquisite views of changing tree colors. That elevation's got to be over 100 feet in drop. And then then you go right over to the next hole where you're going up 100 feet, but you're on a short par 4, with the idea being that if you hit a good drive, you can get up and over the bunker and kick toward the green and actually reach the green, even though it's a 100 feet uphill tee shot. So those are two dramatically different uses of the drumlin, but two very memorable uses of the drumlin.
Now that you've come back and have played it since it was open, and you've talked to various golfers and people that know a little bit about golf anyway, is there any parts of it, the golf course, that you've seen now, how it's playing now that golf balls are being hit, that'll give you some thoughts on maybe retinkering a couple of different areas?
Without question. I was asked that same question by someone else, and I like to believe that I don't have a huge architectural ego. I don't think that just because I did it the first time that that's the way it needs to be, or I stand by my design just because I did it. So I'm always looking for ideas, and I will always analyze someone's ideas to whether it makes sense or not. So there's hole 11. I'd like to do some tweaking in that hole, and we're trying to determine if we want to move the tee a little bit or take out a tree, which we think might make the hole a little bit better by tinkering with it. So that idea is on our heads. I'm working with Matt Sly, who's doing a fantastic job of growing in the golf course. But he and I are also looking at the areas where some of what we call the gunch, the area that are too thick. And some golfers might have some frustrations of having their ball go into the thick areas that are close to the playable areas. And that's just a function of too much water getting into there. But that's not an easy thing to control, especially here in the UP. And Matt trying to keep greens watered, yet not have too much water go into the areas that are thick. So it's a balancing act. It takes a green thumb, which Matt's got, and we need to tweak it. We need to keep on top of it. It's a living, breathing, growing entity. It's going to continually change and mature, and we got to stay on top of that as it does do that, so that it really becomes the best it can be.
Well, a couple of different style holes that catch golfers' attention these days are the short par fours. The big hitters always love that chance to get home and one on a par four. And also maybe a par five or two that longer hitters may have a crack at as well. Take us through the holes on the golf course that playable shots set up a little bit and give you a possibility of doing that.
Sure, we'll start on the front nine with 8 and 9. The two best examples. 8 is a reachable par 4. It's less than 300 yards from the back tee, but there's quite a few bunkers that you got to pay attention to, that if you get in those bunkers, it's not going to be an easy par. But if you're able to avoid them and hit the ball one of your better tee shots, you can be up around the green putting or chipping for eagle. So yes, they are exciting holes. Most architects today will include at least one or two of those type of holes in their routing plans, and we've done that here at Sage Run. And then the next hole, the ninth hole, is a great par 5 risk-reward hole, where if you hit a reasonably good drive and deal with the tree or the bunker on your drive, you can take a shot at getting over the second set of bunkers, which will then kick you toward the green and again have an opportunity for eagle. But if you don't deal with those correctly, now you have to deal with the second landing area bunkers, and then you're looking at bogey if you don't do it correctly. So those are two great holes on the front nine. The short par 4 on the back nine is number 16, where I just described earlier, which is try to hit it to the top of the drumlin, deal with the small pot bunker, and you'll get your ball to kick to the green and maybe have an eagle opportunity. But you leave it in that pot bunker and double bogey comes into play. So those are some great holes, and they're fun.
How much fun was it to do the shorter par 3, number 7, no fancy bunkers, no anything, just straightforward golf, and give people a crack at the golf hole?
Yeah, we looked at that for a while and said, you know, I think it would be nice out here to have a hole where we had no bunkers, because every hole's got bunkers. I like the idea of having one hole on a routing plan or a golf course design where there are no bunkers, that the definition of the hole is from being bunkerless. What can you do without bunkers? And to everyone that I've talked to, I've asked everyone's opinion about that hole, whether they thought it was enough, that it had enough memory to it to make it a good golf hole, and everyone seems to like it.
Well, Paul, if case people from our area down in Chicago have never made the trip up to this part of Michigan, you know, sometimes it's easier just to circle around the bottom end of the lake and go up through Indiana. But if they haven't gotten up in this direction and haven't seen Sweetgrass, your original work here at the resort, tell us a little bit about that golf course and how it differs from Sage Run.
Yeah, Sweetgrass is what I would consider more of a manicured golf course, or a prairie style. It doesn't have any trees on it either, except for two holes, 16 and 17. But for the most part, it's a prairie style golf course, but it's got bent grass fairways, which are different than Sage Run, which have Lomo Blue fairways. So there's a more manicured feel and effect at Sweetgrass, which it's very nice. It's very beautiful. The aesthetics are fantastic as well, but it has a different flavor to it, and it's one of feeling more manicured and more put together in that regard. And I think that the package that the Island Resort offers for any of your people in the Chicago area, I mean, if you want to have a weekend away with great golf at a price that you can't even believe, this is the place to come up to. I'm taking my guys up here for my guys' golf trip because this is just a great venue to go.
Well, tell us a little bit about your island green on the back nine over there at Sweetgrass. It's amazing some of the stories you hear from architects as to why an island green happened. You know, maybe somebody else has one in the area and they wanted to have one too. Sometimes, as Pete Dye used to tell us, we had all this extra dirt, we had to put it somewhere, and we threw it in this low spot, and then somebody said, well, why don't we surround the green with water or sand or something like that? And he says, then the island green concept was born.
The island green over at Sweetgrass came about rather organically. We had to have an irrigation pond, and we needed it to be so big. And we needed and a par 3 fit within the routing plan around that area. So we looked at it, and as we kept looking at the size of the water and the routing, you know, it became obvious that you could do an island green there if you wanted one. And then we started to look at it further, and we realized that the name of the resort was the Island Resort and Casino. So we're like, wow, that actually kind of fits with the name of the resort already. And I think the kicker was when Pat Grollo, who was the administrator here, found a really fantastic-looking bridge from the Department of Transportation in Michigan. And it was an abandoned bridge. We could get it for free. My construction manager at the time said he could install it at a price that was unbelievably low. So there was really no cost to this bridge. So all those things kind of came together, and we said, you know what makes, let's make an island green, put that bridge across it. It fits with the island resort and casino. And that's how it happened.
One hole over there that I'm not going to say signature hole, but one that draws a lot of conversation from the golfers. And, of course, being the fact that there's a casino just a couple hundred yards away, is there a real risk reward that you can do a little gambling on?
There you go. Yeah, I'll give you two of the holes that do it. Start with number 12. It's probably the more unique hole that everyone remembers because it's what they call a Baritz green. There's a valley in the very middle of the green that goes through it where you can put the pin. And on each side of the 6 to 7 foot high valley are two other flat areas of the green, and the back pin and the front pin. And everyone remembers that hole pretty well. And it's a very memorable hole due to the Baritz green factor. And so I love that hole. And the women who play at the Symetra Tour, they all remember that hole well. And they like to, you know, make fun of me a little bit about that design and talk about how difficult it is to get it to the back pin, and I like to show them that I did hit a 5-iron there and held it on the back tier. So it's a playable hole. It's very memorable. And the gambling hole would be the 14th hole where you can drive the green. And a lot of the women try to during the tournament. A lot of guys I play with. It's a fun hole to try to get there in one and make an eagle, but there's a lot of risk involved, and I've seen a lot of double bogeys as well as birdies.
And I think there's also a hole over there that you don't have to try to make an eagle. There already is an eagle over there near the green.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring that hole up necessarily because I've never been the biggest fan of the eagles that we put over there because they were, you know, the chairman of the tribe wanted the eagles on that hole. We had designed the hole to have the theme of an eagle because we found a stump over there that looked like an eagle, and we were going to subtly make the golf hole have the inspiration of an eagle. We never meant it to be so literal. But the chairman found a sculptor who was able to create some literal eagle sculptures, and the chairman thought it was a good idea to put it out there on the stump, and the chairman at the end of the day owns the golf course, so I couldn't make too many objections.
Finally, talk about that closing double green there you've got for 9 and 18. It's a big, long green, and obviously it takes care of two holes, but it looks like it's big enough that there's it gives anybody who's setting up the golf course plenty of pin placement options.
Yeah, the double green is a fun ending sequence. I've always enjoyed how that looks. They both curl around the water features that we created there to have a final par fives for both the front nine and the back nine, and the double green is one where we, believe it or not, we looked at the forms of the Upper Peninsula, and we tried to get inspired by how the Upper Peninsula forms look. So if you were to look at the shape and form of the Upper Peninsula on a map, we tried to utilize that as an inspiration for how the forms might come out in the green. Again, it wasn't a literal thing. You wouldn't notice it unless you were told it. And it became huge, and it's a really exciting finishing sequence. And again, the ladies on the Symetra Tour all love that. I enjoy sitting in the booth at the end of the tournament watching people come up and finish on the same green. So, and it also reminds me of Scotland, so that's another reason I like it.
Any other projects you're working on, either new construction or renovation restoration projects?
Yeah, we're working on a new one in Vietnam right now. We're doing a lot of work overseas. We're doing some renovation out in the Philadelphia area, and we're doing some work in Ohio. We've got some work, looks like, going on in Kansas. We're probably going to be doing work in Indiana, New York. So we got work going on all over the country, and we're looking forward to doing some. Actually, might even be doing another one in China coming up, even though that China's not been doing a lot of work over there. I think we're going to be doing another project there. So.